what happened in Italy is that we have been working a lot in trying to making people aware about the fact that if you turn your head on the other side and want to look what has been happening and still happens in Gaza, you are basically you are giving your support to the violation of international law and the violation of human rights for all the people. And in Italy, we have been witnessing something that, in my opinion, is a political miracle, because we had today the launch of a national strike, and we had hundreds of thousands of people who, in a non-violent, totally non-violent way, has been marching in Rome. I am in Rome now, but in Milan,
Maria
in Florence,
Elena Delia, we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you for that update. We'll continue to update on Monday. Spokesperson for the Global Samud Flotilla. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO, the best in community radio.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that too. Call our car donation experts at the Center for Car Donations to find out more information, ask questions, and support KBOO. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support available by text or phone call to 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a district judge in Oregon hears a case to stop National Guard troops from being deployed to Portland.
Portlanders rally against Trump's plan to federalize Oregon's National Guard.
And in international news, Hamas agrees to release all remaining hostages as Israel intercepts the last remaining boat in the Global Samud Flotilla.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 3rd, 2025. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Josh Salem. The federal courthouse in Portland was packed earlier today during the hearing on a temporary restraining order aimed at stopping Donald Trump from deploying the National Guard in Portland. U.S. District Court Judge Karen Immergut heard the case this morning. Local freelance journalist Erica Bolstead was in the overflow courtroom and shares what each side argued.
They're asking for a temporary restraining order, which would keep National Guard troops from being deployed in Portland to protect the ICE facility in Southwest Portland. That's kind of the heart of the case. And so most of the arguments were around, you know, that very specific, why that shouldn't happen. And the state and the city of Portland have some really broad arguments. Some of them are broad, which are that this is a vast overreach of federal power. This is a vast overreach of what the federal government's relationship with the state of Oregon should be, and that allowing the president to call up the National Guard in states where the governor objects to it is a deterioration of the sovereign rights of states. And they also worried more broadly, kind of the big picture issues that they were looking at, or that the National Guard, if it's activated, that is something that could really change the role of military in society, and that this is a real test case that, you know, seeing it play out in cities like Portland is perhaps, you know, a disturbing change in how our military has always interacted with the citizens of the United States. And more practically, attorneys for both the state and the city said that they were worried that the presence of federal troops in Portland could ratchet up tensions. And also, more thematically, I think that one of the keys to the state and city case here is that they really think that the president is operating from a completely different set of facts than what are on the ground here in Portland. The attorney for the Justice Department, the federal lawyer who was arguing the president's side of this case, he described what was happening at the ICE facility as the work of, quote, vicious and cruel radicals. That's how he described it. And, you know, had a list of things that had happened at the ICE facility over the course of the last few weeks and months. However, most of what they were referring to, most of what the lawyer for the federal government was referring to, happened in June. That was, you know, that was when much of the action was happening. And so, you know, the judge was pretty skeptical of that, because what they were asking for is, you know, they were justifying the presence of federal troops with activity that was happening in June rather than the most recent activity. And so that was one of the things that the judge was pretty skeptical about. You know, the government was also, the federal government, that is, was also describing what is about to happen, or what they're bringing the National Guard here for, as a state of rebellion in Portland. And that was, you know, pretty universally derided by the attorneys for both the state of Oregon and for the city, you know, that it was a very broad definition of rebellion that could include almost any opposition to authority, whether it could be just like standard First Amendment right to protest, or just like kind of regular criminal activity, not, you know, anything that is, that would be considered a threat to national security. And so both of those arguments, that Portland is in a state of rebellion, and that this is the work of cruel and vicious radicals, you know, did not seem to be well received by the judge. And in fact, you know, the courtroom that I was in was an overflow courtroom, but it was very quiet, very similar to what it would have been like in the main courtroom. And that was a moment wherein there were a lot of lawyers in there, a lot of legal observers, curious people, you know, just from the public who wanted to view this hearing. And that was a moment when the attorney for the Justice Department, you know, when he said vicious and cruel radicals, that was the one moment where at that moment there was an audible a round of quiet laughter in the courtroom that was, you know, it was really met with kind of disbelief in this Portland courtroom.
That was local freelance journalist Erica Bolstead explaining the arguments inside federal court today in the National Guard temporary restraining order case. Bolstead says Judge Immergut seemed concerned about some of the Trump administration's assertions. In particular, she voiced skepticism about Trump sending orders from his Truth Social account. Immergut also questioned whether National Guard troops would be paid while the federal government is shut down. Lawyers for the Trump administration said they didn't know. Lawyers for Portland and the state of Oregon said they would not be getting paid while doing the work, but they could be paid back later. A ruling is expected soon, possibly later today or tomorrow.
Oregonians are awaiting a decision on whether a judge will stop National Guard troops from being put on Portland streets. A small group of peaceful demonstrators gathered outside the Mark O. Hatfield United States Courthouse today, awaiting the verdict. They held signs saying, "Guard, go home." Music played from speakers across the street. KABU talked with two veterans at the demonstrations.
I served in Afghanistan. I know what a war zone looks like. This is not a war zone. This is our home. This is American soil. Troops don't get deployed to American soil unless there's an enemy of the state that's actively attacking. He's trying to call us. Donald Trump is trying to call us. People out here peacefully protesting for our friends and neighbors down at ICE and everywhere else in the city where we're standing up for our rights and for the rights of our immigrant friends and neighbors. They're trying to call us terrorists, which is crazy because a literal terrorist is in the White House, literally trying to terrorize this city with troops. Obviously, it's the pot calling the kettle black.
Our National Guard is used for deployments, for wildfires, for backup in major conflicts. For instance, Iraq. I was deployed during OEF and OIF. That's what deployments are for. Riots in LA? Not Portland, who's just hanging out here loving, you know, nature. I want to make sure that all the guardsmen that are caught up in this situation, I feel for them deeply, just because they're living a double-edged sword right now.
Three Portland City councilors joined the demonstrations: Samir Canal, Mitch Green, and Angelita Murillo. Here's Councilor Canal.
I think it's really important that Portlanders come out here because we are in a position where the federal government would be sending troops here without any legal authorization to do so. This wasn't asked for, it's not wanted, it's not needed. As you can see, other than a little loud Rage Against the Machine right now, it's a very calm day. It's perfect Portland weather. We're doing the things we always do. Nonviolent protest is a tradition in Portland that goes back decades. And so it's really vital that we all come together both to stand up for our right to do this, but also to say we do not need and it will not help to have the National Guard here. The estimates now it's going to be $10 million of federal money being spent on this. Can you imagine the good you could do with $10 million in Portland instead? And so it's wasteful, fiscally irresponsible, likely to be an attempt to violate Portlanders' rights, and we didn't ask for it, and there's no legal authorization. Today we're outside the courthouse, and our hope is that the judge will agree with us and put an injunction against this temporary restraining order.
Councilor Green says it's time for Portlanders to get involved in their community and protect their neighbors from ICE.
My name is Mitch Green. I'm a Portland City Councilor for District 4, which has downtown. I'm out here today to reaffirm our constitutionally protected right to protest and to have free speech and to reject Trumpism. What Trump is doing here with the deployment of the National Guard troops is unwarranted, unwanted, and it's the next step in a rise in authoritarianism, and we reject that. I hope today we get a favorable ruling on the temporary restraining order, but even if we don't, I hope to see Portlanders not be scared and cowed from this administration, but to sort of talk to their neighbors, friends, join an organization, and build systems of resistance, because this is not who we are, and this is not welcome in our town. I hope that people protect their neighbors from ICE, and we'll get through this, but the only way out is to band together and come in together in solidarity.
That was Portland City Councilor Mitch Green.
Donald Trump issued an ultimatum to Hamas today, demanding the terrorist organization respond to his Gaza peace plan. Trump said if the group has not agreed to the proposal by 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, all hell would break out. In breaking news, Hamas announced it agreed to release all the living hostages held in Gaza, as well as the bodies of those who had been killed. Trump had unveiled a 20-point plan alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu earlier this week. Netanyahu said during their joint appearance that Israel agreed to the framework, which spells out an end to the war, the release of hostages, and a redevelopment plan in Gaza. Hamas affirmed, quote, readiness to immediately enter into negotiations through the mediators to discuss details, end quote. The plan appeared to butt up against several of Hamas' previously declared non-starters. Those include decommissioning the group's weapons and barring it from taking part in the future governance of Gaza. Under the proposal, all of Hamas infrastructure above and below ground would be destroyed, with the supervision of independent monitors. The plan demands that infrastructure not be rebuilt. It also calls for Israel to release 250 Palestinian prisoners with life sentences, as well as 1,700 Palestinians held since the start of the war. It is not yet clear whether Hamas agreed to a stipulation in the proposal demanding the group be barred from exercising political power there in the future, or whether they would give up arms. It is also not clear whether the current response will satisfy Israel and Trump. The proposal did recognize the aspiration for a Palestinian state.
Israeli forces have boarded and taken control of the final vessel headed to break the blockade on Gaza as part of the global Sumud flotilla. The flotilla was made up of 44 boats with around 500 activists carrying humanitarian aid. The first boats were intercepted late on Wednesday. Activists have been detained, including Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg, South African activist and grandson of Nelson Mandela, Mandla Mandela, and noted American Union leader Chris Smalls. Four Italian parliament members who were on the flotilla have been deported so far. Israel's national security minister has called the activists terrorists and says they should be jailed, not deported. The activists arrested also include two Portlanders, Paul Reed and Stephen. KBOO's Hannah Francis spoke with Reed's mother, Jan Levin, about her son and the flotilla last month.
He's risking his life. He and everybody else on this voyage are risking their lives. And we have talked about that. And he said, honestly, whatever he's going through is nothing compared to what the people of Gaza have been going through for many, many years. And he stressed that over and over again. These people on these boats are there peaceably, there for strictly for bringing humanitarian aid, food, water, medicine, diapers to the people of Gaza. How is that terrorism? They have no weapons. There's not one weapon on any of the boats. They are completely vulnerable, completely unprotected.
That was Jan Levin, the mother of one of the Portlanders detained by Israeli authorities of the global Sumud flotilla, bringing aid to the blockaded Gaza. Italy's unions called a day-long strike in protest of Israel's interception of the aid mission, with tens of thousands of participants. Colombia expelled Israeli diplomats after two Colombian nationals were detained.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with an overnight low of 53. Tomorrow will be cloudy as well, with a chance of rain, and a high of 66. Today in history, in 1949, WERD opens in Atlanta, the first black-owned radio station in the United States. The quote of the day is from American writer Gore Vidal, born this day in 1925. He said, "At any given moment, public opinion is a chaos of superstition, misinformation, and prejudice."
President Donald Trump embraces the conservative Project 2025 blueprint as an administrative roadmap. During his presidential campaign, he repeatedly tried to distance himself from the document, even denying he knew anything about its authors, many of which were close friends. In a post yesterday on his Truth Social site, Trump said he would be meeting with his budget chief, Russ Vought. Quote, he of Project 2025 fame to determine which of the many Democrat agencies, most of which are a political scam, he recommends to be cut, end quote. The Heritage Foundation, an American conservative think tank, produced Project 2025, which calls for a massive overhaul of the federal government in terms of size and shape. It aims to consolidate executive power in favor of far right-wing policies. Both of Trump's Democratic rivals, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, made the document a centerpiece of their campaigns, warning of its extreme plans. Shalonda Young, director of the Office of Management and Budget under Biden, said the administration had clearly been following the project's blueprint all along. Young said, quote, "I guess Democrats were right, but that doesn't make me feel better. I'm angry that this is happening after being told that this document was not going to be the centerpiece of this administration," end quote. Asked about Trump's clear reversal, White House spokesperson Abigail Jackson said, Democrats are just trying to distract from, quote, their decision to shut down the government. Trump has close ties with many of its authors, but during the campaign claimed he didn't know anything about Project 2025. Since his swearing in, Trump has already pursued plans laid out in Project 25 to dramatically expand presidential power and reduce the size of the federal workforce. He now seems to be using the shutdown to accelerate his progress. This includes planned mass firings and targeting of projects championed by Democrats. The Trump administration has canceled $8 billion in green energy projects in states with Democratic senators and has withheld $18 billion for transportation projects in New York City. Project 2025 also calls for weakening public sector unions, aligning federal grants with Republican philosophies, and eliminating medical aid in dying, an end-of-life option pioneered by Oregon decades ago.
The Trump administration threatens thousands of federal layoffs as Democrats demand an investigation into White House shutdown messaging. Trump declares war on cartels, and housing advocates call for support on ballot measures in New York City. With those stories and more, it's Simone Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Look, it's likely going to be in the thousands. It's a very good question, and that's something that the Office of Management and Budget is unfortunately having to work on today. These discussions and these conversations would not be happening if the Democrats had voted to keep the government open.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says the administration hasn't determined which federal employees will be let go in mass firings tied to the shutdown. President Donald Trump met with White House Office of Management and Budget Director Russell Vogt to discuss deep cuts to what the president calls Democrat agencies. Wednesday, Vogt said they're ending billions for transportation projects in New York City and energy projects in 16 mostly Democratic-led states. Republicans continue to press for stopgap funding at current levels. Democrats continue to demand restoration of support for the health care of as many as 20 million people. The Senate will vote again today on two failed competing budget measures. Neither is likely to pass. One Washington Post poll found nearly half of Americans blamed the GOP for the shutdown, while 30% blamed the other party. Democrats on House oversight want an investigation into Trump administration attacks. Partisan messages have been added to government agency websites that say, in one case, the radical left in Congress shut down the government. Craig Holdman with Watchdog Public Citizen calls that a direct violation of the Hatch Act, which prohibits federal employees from engaging in partisan activity on the job. He says he's filed formal legal complaints.
Because these posts are on the public web pages, they are designed to influence the American voter when it comes to the upcoming election in 2026. These posts are unbelievable and egregious violations.
The White House now says the country is at war with the drug cartels, which Trump calls terrorist groups. A notice sent to Congress is designed as a legal rationale for three strikes on civilian vessels in international waters off Venezuela. The attacks drew criticism from Democrats and even some Republicans. New York City residents will vote in local elections in November, including three referendums on streamlining approval for housing and infrastructure projects to make housing more affordable. Despite their popularity, they face opposition from city council, which would see reduced authority. A group of council members and a Republican Staten Island congresswoman are suing, arguing the measures don't get a required environmental review. Amit Singh Bagga with the Yes on Affordable Housing campaign says they're badly needed.
We are at a population of 8.5 million, which is 1.2 million higher than in 1990. And according to the Department of City Planning, we are on track to be at 9 million by 2035. Our pace of housing construction has simply not kept up.
New York City is home to a huge portion of the country's middle-income renters, but nearly half are severely cost-burdened, and rent continues to rise. Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg and hundreds of others were detained by Israeli forces. They're trying to address what they call famine and genocide in Gaza by breaking Israel's 18-year naval blockade on the coastal strip. I'm Zaman Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
FEMA holds its first ever disaster training course for an Alaskan tribe, hoping to improve coordination between communities during disasters. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribe on Alaska's North Slope recently hosted an emergency management course in Utqiagvik. Organizers say it's the first for a tribe in Alaska and part of an effort to bolster coordination between communities in the Arctic during disasters. The Alaska Desk's Ayolna Naiden reports.
Inupiat community of the Arctic Slope is a regional tribe representing seven North Slope villages. The tribe worked with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, to host a course to prepare villages to respond to disasters. Stephanie Nelson is the Director of Emergency Management for the tribe. She says the training was important in light of increasing emergencies in the region and given the isolated geography of many North Slope communities.
And the outcome is enhancing the communication from all attendees and becoming better at being prepared to respond to different levels of incidences, emergencies that we face within the Arctic.
Nelson says that two major discussions focused on scenarios similar to actual emergencies from 2022, like Typhoon Mirbok in Point Hope and a gas leak at Alpine Oil Field near New Exit. Participants used those examples to discuss how cities, North Slope Borough, and tribal governments can work together in an emergency situation. The course is the result of the tribe's efforts to implement an official emergency management program. John Pennington is a professor of Homeland Security and Emergency Management at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
It's using the strength of the Alaska Native communities that are the North Slope to improve emergency management through the lens of Alaska Natives first and foremost.
Pennington says that communities in the Arctic have been seeing intensifying storms and erosion. The state of Alaska is responsible for a vast area where several communities can experience disasters at the same time. But Pennington says that the tribe's new emergency program will also help North Slope communities to seek disaster declarations directly from the federal government when needed, which can speed up the delivery of assistance. In Anchorage, I am Alona Knighton.
The Indian Health Service is operating as business as usual during the federal government shutdown, which started Wednesday. The IHS says it has received advanced appropriations. Tribal leaders from across the country have been raising concerns about the shutdown. This week, President Thora Walsh Padilla of the Mescalero Apache tribe in New Mexico updated her community in a social media post, saying health services are operating normally, but says she's concerned about other federal programs, including Medicaid, food stamps, and Social Security, but assures the community the tribe continues its work.
Tribal leadership has conveyed our concerns to our federal representatives, and we are continually reaching out for updates as the federal budget is being developed. But please be assured, we will get through this together. Our tribe will still stand strong.
The National Congress of American Indians is also raising concerns about the government shutdown and has posted a resources page online for tribes. Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis of the Gila River Indian Community in Arizona sending his condolences on behalf of the tribe to the family, colleagues, and friends of Dr. Jane Goodall. The well-known primatologist passed away this week at age 91. She spent time on the Gila River Indian Reservation on Earth Day. Lewis says she reached out to young people.
To encourage them to be leaders, to be protectors of our water, of our land, of our wildlife, and of our planet.
Lewis says the tribe looks forward to carrying on her legacy of conservation. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The towns of Talent and Phoenix in southern Oregon have come a long way since the Alameda wildfires destroyed much of their buildings in 2020. Now they are rebuilding with a focus on energy efficiency and fire resiliency. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
5 years after the Almeda fire destroyed more than 3,000 homes and businesses in Southern Oregon, the cities of Talent and Phoenix are prioritizing energy efficiency, affordability, and wildfire resilience as they rebuild. Phoenix worked with Energy Trust of Oregon to build a new energy-efficient public safety building to replace facilities lost in the 2020 wildfire. The 20,000-square-foot hub houses city offices, police, and fire services. Phoenix City Manager Eric Swanson says with the help of local, state, and federal partners, the city has been able to make the best out of a tragic situation.
We've been able to take advantage of a lot of energy efficiency initiatives in our building, which I think has really set us up well for the future. We're planning for the worst, hoping for the best.
The building's energy efficiency measures, including efficient lighting, HVAC systems, and stormwater management, are expected to save thousands of dollars annually. Swanson says residential construction in the city is largely complete, although rebuilding of mobile homes and commercial buildings has been lagging behind. Talent, Oregon is just south of Phoenix and lost 700 homes in the fire. Michael Hoke with Energy Trust of Oregon helped with the rebuilding process there.
We'd lost 40% of our town. That building stock was a lot built in the 60s or the 70s. How do we encourage people to build more resilient, to build with energy efficiency top of mind?
He says the city partnered with Energy Trust to create the Energy Performance Scores Rebuild Program, which incentivizes wildfire victims to rebuild their homes to be more energy efficient and wildfire resistant. He adds residents are happy with the results.
It's always lovely getting a text from one of them saying, hey, I'm not paying any energy because I'm producing more solar energy than I'm consuming. Or, hey, my energy bill is still pretty low.
For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
New research from the Annie E. Casey Foundation gives best practices for organizations focused on helping teenagers become healthy adults. Suzanne Potter has the details.
Research on brain science shows that young people's judgment, impulse control, and planning don't fully develop until about age 24 or 25. Now programs to help adolescents thrive are building on new insights. Studies suggest that young people between the ages of 14 and 24 tend to be more successful if programs are clear and structured around a series of rewards rather than revolving around long lists of rules and punishments. Annie E. Casey Foundation President